Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So, at the heart of the teachings of our tradition is Reverend Master Ji Yu herself. While she was alive, she embodied these teachings. And she left us with writings and Dharma talks, which not only provide us with some of the gems of understanding that she discovered as she awakened, or was awakened by coming together with what was there in her life, she also left us with accounts of how it took place, of what was asked, and how she found her way to respond. And nothing was left out, not her humanity, not the situations, the states of mind. Not only did she include it all in her accounts, she was pointing to the fact that it was all part of the process for us not to try to push away some parts or want these states of mind and not those. She discovered that herself again and again, and she passed it on to ourselves again and again. And, you know, each morning we have been saying in the Sandokai, light goes with darkness as the sequence does of steps in walking. All things herein have inherent great potentiality. And in a commentary on that scripture, Reverend Master once again up the ante for us by saying, it is actually light and darkness within each step, not one after the other. It is because light and darkness are within each step that there is this inherent great potentiality in both the light and the dark. No matter how dark the karma may be within you, no matter how dark the karma within you may seem, no matter how light, know that the essence of both is in fact identical. Those kinds of pointings undo me, okay. And there is in the invocation the words to which Reverend Master Ji Yu wrote for the Buddhist Parinirvana, the last stanza. Take this in. Within all darkness there is light. There aid each other lending. Though different, both are always bright. They never were contending. Within all darkness there is light, their aid each other lending. Though different, both are always bright. They never were contending. Beyond them truth is always crowned. Parinirvana here is found. It never has an ending. So, early in my training, when Reverend Master published How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, I came across a line. It was one of those lines that just stops us, and something turned, and I realized I had found the purpose and meaning of my life that I'd been wondering about for some time, and my training kind of commenced. And what she said, I mean, what didn't she say? But the part that caught me, she was talking about, even in the darkest place, the truth may be seen and heard. Thus, meditation is possible for eternity. There is always light in darkness, and the Buddha may be seen therein if we have the willingness to look. That's what's asked, the willingness to look. And I'm going to be talking more about that. And then she goes on to speak of eternal meditation. And she said, its use is to bring peace and freedom in all the situations that life brings. All the situations life brings. And it kind of threw into relief how much of my life, how much of the energy of my life was spent trying to turn away from what I didn't want and grasping after. It's just the basics, once again, that we've been touching on all week. And I knew that the peace and freedom she spoke of was possible. And hadn't a clue. But then she started leaving all these clues, kept pointing. And I think this is where our own experience of training can be so valuable, because when you hear something about all situations and you think of all your situations, and the encouragement not to turn away from any of them, to trust that they all are part of what you most deeply long to do, I think it becomes increasingly wrenching when we find ourselves turning away. And I actually think that is what is at the real heart of our suffering, because there's some way we know this truth. She has, you know, would repeatedly give voice to, and yet with the rawness of the past karma coming up, or the swirl of colliding voices in our heads, I mean, whatever the states of mind, we can also appreciate how the wheel continues to be turned in the wrong direction. How understandable it is. So, so it doesn't lead us to judge ourselves and others, but it can help us be willing to turn toward. And the beauty of her accounts is we don't have to suppose that we're calm when we turn toward, that there isn't this racket going on of you can't do this, or, you know, well, you know your own racket. It's not a problem. Nothing can prevent us from this turning toward. That's the freedom she's talking about that we discover. We have this freedom to do so. And so the wonderful gift of what of her descriptions was, we begin to catch, oh, I don't have to be worried about all of this. It's just a matter of, with all of that going on, no matter how I feel, you know, whoops, take a breath, hit your chest if you need to like that, and see if you can take a step in that direction. And to me, I've never experienced that as will. Again, willingness is closer. I think it has more to do with love. There's something, you know, there's love at the heart of all of this, in this, the immaculacy of the flow. And I think when we come to really know our own suffering, you know, really feel what that feels like, we can sense the suffering of others more fully. And there's just this wish out of love to do something, to make a gesture, even the tiniest step, in a direction that will help free this confusion, this kind of really at heart innocent incomprehension, where we just end up doing the very things that just compound the suffering. And so you could say it's out of compassion. It is. And I think there's an aspect of love there too. There's just something kind of unstoppable. It will get the better of us sooner or later. So there's that. And what form, it's not a form, and I know some of you would already be able to describe how it is for you, but it turns out we each, because of this longing or because of this love, or because it's possible, I mean, it is possible, and we find ourselves doing it, how that works for us is kind of precious. And I love to come across descriptions of it. And I'm going to include one from Reverend Master Hario. He gave a Dharma talk at Throstlehold Buddhist Monastery in 1999. I wasn't there, but I got the benefit of listening to it. And this is how he speaks of, well, in a way, it can feel like a moment. Time kind of stops. But when we reach a point where just about everything falls away and we find ourselves with this pure wish. And here is how he talks about it. And he describes this as meditation. Ah, perhaps this is what is at the heart of our meditation. Let's think about that as you hear this. And you can also see why Reverend Master Ji sometimes referred to our meditation as pure prayer. So, this is what Reverend Master Hario says. What I see as meditation is really an opening up to whatever is true. Whatever is true, whatever is real, I'm opening up to that. And I'm emptying myself as completely of myself, so that whatever is true can be communicated to me, known by me, poured into me with as little influence of my own hands, my own mind, my own thinking. So meditation in this sense is a very profound act of faith. A profound religious act. It is saying truth, truth, show thyself. I won't stand in the way. Whatever it is, I'm willing to accept it. It is so pure. There's an innocence to it. I tell you, we just open. And in my own experience, it comes out more about wonder, you know, wonder. And so a lot of my practice is remembering to wonder. And you know, back to the fact that all of it is there helping us. Once I began to wonder, and wondering is a kind of questioning. It's actually a way of asking for help, but it's the form that comes to me. You know, sometimes when the unexpected happens or the unwanted thing is suddenly there, we can, in exasperation, say, "What now?" or something. We can also say, "What now? Now that this is here, what now?" We can open, you know, we can let go of whatever we thought was going to happen, and we can just meet what's there. And so some years back, I'm just going to tell a story. I mean, it's not a story. It happened. It was an unexpected, unwanted thing. And it, many years ago, just there talking to someone, and suddenly a third person came who was very, very angry. Something had happened, and well, you know how that can happen with yourself. And the force of that anger, you could feel some distance away, and then there it was, and it was unfolding. And I knew this person well. I had, you know, been with her in spiritual counseling. And so I did all kinds of things. I said things. Nothing helped. In fact, everything I tried to do seemed to be making it worse. And some of you may know this story from the journal, the only journal article I've ever written, but it's in there. So at that point, what occurred to me to do was, because the person, as happens with us sometimes, there's so much going on, was kind of wildly pacing back and forth as, and so I thought, sometimes human touch, I'll just reach out and touch her arm, kind of a calming touch, you know, so that, to, you know, so she could stop pacing. So I did so, and she jerked away and said, "Don't touch me." And that was so startling that it's kind of like at that point, time stopped. Or it didn't stop, it slowed definitely. What did I say? Because I find words hard to... Oh, it gave me pause. I took a few deep breaths, grew still, and stopped trying to do anything. The reality of the situation dawned on me, and a simple truth registered. Guess what it was? I don't know what to do here. And that was sobering, because this person was very dear to me, and what unfolds in anger, you know, has consequences. So with that, a question arose, a real question. It just spontaneously arose there in the very, there, in the core of my being. What will help? And a quiet answer came. It arose from that very same place. Instantly and with the dearest freshness. I remember that freshness. And that's actually true of almost, I've never known a time when something I've awakened to, some illumination, hasn't had a clarity, a purity, something so directly so, that you just bow. So What do you suppose it was? I still smile. It was apologize. That astonished me. And there was a sputtering of self that was beginning, like, but who needs to apologize here? Okay. But before that little dark cloud could get going, what happened was I suddenly remembered. How did I put it? Oh, that fleeting moment, which I had completely forgotten about. That, what was it? That fleeting moment when, as she jerked away, I had been surprised to discover, instead of just touching her, I had actually grabbed her arm. I realized that there had been considerable forcefulness in that grab. No wonder her "don't touch me." Okay. So then, how did that happen? That wondering just spontaneous, how did that happen? Because what I thought I was doing, and so that question formed in me. And the answer this time came simply as a clear seeing of what had been going on inside of me during all of this, from the time I first caught sight of her, during all of this. The extent of the, no, I don't want this. I don't want this to be happening. And the turbulent emotional reactions issuing forth from that. There were lots of good reasons, okay, why I didn't want this to be happening. This was very serious, what was taking place, and the consequences could have been very, very serious. And I felt deep concern for the woman herself. That was there too. But my failure to notice these reactions at the time had allowed them to give a forceful, violent spin to whatever I did, which made matters worse. Does this help you get a glimpse of why sometimes when we think all we're doing is something and the reaction back is something, I mean, there's just more going on. And so as we train, we become more aware of the extra spin that's in there. And it's not to judge it, it's just to understand. Let that turbulence be a catalyst, a reminder to grow even more still before we act. So I apologized, and I think she may have said something like, "You're right, that was wrong to do." I don't know. I don't even remember that. But whatever she did, whatever she said, she then spun around and started walking away. And I think all of us know situations where we are with loved ones or, in, you know, something important is going on and one person decides to leave. And we don't want them to leave. And so here again would have been an opportunity. I could have said, "What do you think you're doing?" or something. I could have gone an angry route. I could have given up. You know, there are a lot of... But what happened, and again, I attribute this to having stumbled into repeatedly wondering in this way. I was kind of in a very still place. Instead, I just wondered, what now? What do I do now? And what came forth was, call after her. Begin again. So I called her name and I said, "Please come back. Let's begin again." And wonder of wonders, she did. And I think it is so much easier for us to catch something good to do when another person is speaking to us from a place that I had stumbled into speaking from, you know. And so we never know, but I will never regret heeding that prompting to call after her and to invite. Well, so she came back and we're walking to a place where we can talk. I am frantic. I don't have a clue what's going to happen now, you know. But I don't even remember. I know we talked and, you know, good came of it. But the preciousness was the willingness we each had. I mean, think of the courage it took for her, too. You know, so two beings were walking along, you know, possibly even with our knees knocking together, but trusting. So this is at the heart of what I believe Reverend Master Ji was talking about. Well, there are many things probably there, but when she was able to say, "We come to know peace and freedom in whatever situation life brings us," it's because no matter what, we have this way of opening. As she showed us again and again in her own life of training. And there's a peace and a freedom in that. And no one, no circumstance can take that from us. It's just our own willingness, our own willingness. And without fail, that willingness does manifest again and again. It doesn't care how long. So, just one more thing. There will come points in our life of training where the wonderful tools in our tool belt we've been talking about this week, they may not in that moment seem to be there. Or they may be there, and there's something about the situation that we know what we need to do is not reach for anything, but to just directly open. And so do so. We can do so. So, to end, because I would love for you to have some meditation, let's return to where we began this morning in Reverend Master Mayon's beautiful expression of gratitude to Reverend Master Jiyu during the dedication, you know, at the beginning of morning service. She offered her gratitude for the gift Reverend Master Jiyu gave us of showing it is possible to sit still in all the situations life brings, and to do so with faith, patience, kindness and joy.